Welcome to Political Rewind. It's 2:06 on Wednesday afternoon. And as usual, we are live in the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting to talk about all the exciting things that are happening in politics right now. Clearly, the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia is at the top of that list. I'm joined today in the studio by AJC columnist Kyle Wingfield. It's great to have you here. Your columns, are, I always have to ask you, are in the paper on 2 days. Which 2 days?
Thursdays and Sundays.
Described as the conservative columnist for the AJC.
Except by Trump fans.
Yeah, except by the Trump people. What's your Twitter handle?
At K Wingfield AJC, and my blog's at kylewingfield.blog.myajc.com.
All right. All right. Mary Margaret Oliver, State Representative Mary Margaret Oliver, joins us, a longtime member both of the Georgia Senate and then the Georgia House. It's a real pleasure to have you back with us. I know you do tweet, but you're not. You can never remember what your Twitter handle is, so we won't ask you.
She's active on Facebook, though.
Yeah, Theron Johnson, as you just heard, is here. Yes, Mary Margaret, we do know you're on Facebook, so people can communicate with you through Facebook. And Theron Johnson, Democratic strategist, who is very active in National Democratic Party affairs. He ran Barack Obama's Southern Georgia campaign, Theron, in the 2012 reelection bid, right? And what's your Twitter handle?
Theron Johnson, T-H-A-R-O-N, Johnson.
All right. I want you to get some of the feedback instead of me every now and then.
I love it.
Our Twitter handle, which I don't promote often enough, is PoliticsGPB. We do encourage you to join the conversation by tweeting us throughout the show and beyond. So we also have with us on the telephone one of our political insider regulars, Dr. Andra Gillespie, an associate professor of political science at Emory University. Andra, you're up in Philadelphia.
I am. How are you?
We're great. Thank you for joining us by phone.
No problem.
I want to start with you, if I may, Andra, because you were in the hall last night, I believe,
yes,
when Hillary Clinton went over the top. Just describe for us what the atmosphere was like, how it felt to you. Just give us an eyewitness report.
So, it was handled a little differently than normal. So usually you'll see the candidate's home state pass, and then when you're getting right to the threshold, then the candidate's home state will then be allowed to take the floor and put their candidate over the top. So when we got to New York, I thought for sure New York was going to pass. Andrew Cuomo made this long speech, and then he announced the votes in his state. So what they did differently, in part because of the superdelegate allocation, which was going to put Hillary Clinton over the top, they let all of the states go. Vermont passed, and it was Bernie Sanders who made the motion to suspend the rules to allow for Hillary Clinton to be nominated as a vote by acclamation. It was an attempt at reconciliation, but a lot of Sanders supporters ended up walking out after the vote. Some of them did come back toward the end, or their seats got filled, I should say, toward the end. So it was still a moving moment, but because of the protest, it was a little anticlimactic as well.
Yeah, Kyle, a good number of the Sanders folks marched to the media tent outside the arena and staged a brief sit-in there. I guess the media must have been partly to blame for Sanders not winning the nomination.
Yeah, I suppose so. We're normally to blame for everything that goes wrong in politics, I find. But my poor colleagues in the media, you know, first we get blamed for everything. Second, in Philadelphia, we're set up in this tent, susceptible to the elements and getting rain on the computer equipment. I heard the other night, and then you get overthrown by the Bernie supporters.
Mary Margaret, there was a lot of suspense in the hall last night, watching to see whether Bernie Sanders was going to come down to the Vermont delegation. He was sitting up in a family box, and cameras kept picking him up, and everyone was waiting to see, would he come down and throw the convention to Hillary Clinton? Now, not to put too fine a point on this, but the reports that he moved that she be nominated by acclamation, I think if you go back and listen, what he moved for was that the votes be recorded as cast, which I think means his votes count and her votes mm-hmm. count. But then he moved that she be declared the nominee. It's not a big difference, but it is a subtle little difference in terms of how Bernie really feels about what he accomplished and what he wants to be known for.
I congratulate Bernie on being a part of an exciting day yesterday. I think he absolutely did the right thing. There was a nuance there that probably 1 in 7,000 people picked up.
Yeah, most of the media reported that he came down and declared her, asked that she be declared unanimously. But in any case,
it was emotional for him. It was emotional for everybody. I applaud him in the way he supported her nomination.
Theron, what did you see as you watched this last night?
You know, I agree with State Representative Oliver that, you know, Bernie Sanders is really the big winner so far in this convention. I mean, of course, we've had dynamic speeches from First Lady Michelle Obama. President Clinton did a phenomenal job last night. We had the mothers of the victims of sons that have been murdered and daughters that have been murdered. But really, Bernie Sanders has just really handled himself in a very honorable way. And so I think this Bernie or bust crowd, this sort of sentiment amongst the Bernie Sanders supporters of being disappointed that their candidate did not win. I think what you saw last night is that Bernie Sanders is actually the winner because I think he has really put himself at the table and to have a really, really big influence on the party for the next, I think, 6 to 8 cycles. Because, I mean, he's been able to bring a message of college affordability, talking about health care, trade, et cetera. And I think that he's definitely done a really good job. And I think ultimately his supporters will follow him.
Well, I do want to, Mary Margaret, you were a member of the Rules Committee at the convention, although you didn't stay on as a delegate. And I want to talk in a bit about how Bernie Sanders made an impact there. But before we do, let's not let a historic moment, Kyle Wingfield, pass. Last night, Hillary Clinton became the first woman nominated president by a major party in the United States. And I want to play something, and then Kyle, get you to be the first to chime in. For those of you who weren't able to see, it didn't stay up late enough, excuse me, they showed up on the big screen. They had pictures of every one of the presidents of the United States, obviously all men. And then they did what I thought was kind of a hokey little effect. We heard glass shatter and all those pictures shattered. It was the glass ceiling shattering. But then there was Hillary by video from her home in New York.
I can't believe we just put the biggest crack in that glass ceiling yet. If there are any little girls out there who stayed up late to watch, let me just say, I may become the first woman president, but one of you is next. Thank you all. I can't wait to join you in Philadelphia. Thank you.
Kyle?
Look, there's no doubt it was a historic moment. Just as now President Obama's nomination 8 years ago was a historic moment, I think it does show that a lot of the barriers that have existed in the past don't really exist, certainly not to the same degree as they used to. And but it's going to be interesting to see. So is this sort of the apex of this celebration for the Democrats until November, or is this something that they keep harping on from now until then?
So let me ask the two women on the panel today, and let me get you back into the conversation. What your take on seeing this historic moment? There are people who think that for some reason or another, we haven't kind of absorbed this with the same impact that we felt when Barack Obama became the first African-American nominee in a major political party. Do you get a sense of that, or what was your reaction to this?
Well, not to steal other people's thunder here, I know we'll be publishing this in the Atlanta Press sometime soon, but I mean, you know, I think that there is some truth to sort of what it feels like. You know, I wish I could have said that I was in Denver in 2008. I wasn't, so I can't compare Denver to Cleveland, but it's not the same typical type of zeitgeist. That doesn't make it any less important, nor do I think it makes it any less impactful. So even if you weren't particularly moved by the nomination of a first woman president the same way you were moved by the first African-American president, that doesn't mean that the impact isn't going to be powerful or that it wasn't powerful at all. And I think last night, which I've casually dubbed Ladies Night at the DNC, really kind of impacted that. Like, it was highly unusual to see that many female speakers getting up to support a female candidate who had just made history. And so even if you don't get the same type of warm fuzzies because Hillary Clinton is a polarizing political figure, that does not diminish what she has accomplished at all. And so, you know, maybe we'll have a delayed reaction to it, but, you know, I think that this is just as important as Barack Obama's nomination.
Mary Margaret, you've been around in politics. You just told us before we went on the air you were the first woman named a committee chair in the when you were a member of the state Senate, right?
That's correct.
So for you, and you also, back in 1992 when Bill Clinton was the candidate, got to know Hillary Clinton a little bit. So, you know, how did this feel for you?
It was beyond emotional. I was surprised at how emotionally I responded to it. I was very, very excited yesterday, and I really didn't quite anticipate that. I do not consider it to be harping to talk about the significance of her role throughout her career, and most importantly now. I think it'll build. I really think. I think the excitement that Meryl Streep had in front of tens of millions of people and the excitement I had with a very much smaller group at home is phenomenal. It's just very, very big deal.
Theron, so let me ask you this question. There's been a lot. I mean, obviously the impact of a female candidate is extraordinary. But the convention has played up the woman's role, not just Hillary, but other women leaders, congressional leaders, and the like. At a certain point, do you worry as a strategist that you can go too far with that? That there has to be an effort to broaden the tent before this convention is over?
Well, I want to totally agree with Mary Margaret and Andrea that this, you know, this milestone of Hillary Clinton being nominated the first woman of a major party cannot be understated. I mean, this was a huge, huge night, not just for Democrats, but just to show that this country that is great is people are willing to say this woman is prepared to be the nominee to go on to hopefully be president of the United States. Now, at a time, Bill, when I know this and you know this and Kyle knows this and we all got to admit it, but women run the world. I mean, we're, you know, as men, we're here and we occupy this space, but women truly, truly run the world. And what I mean by that is that, you know, if you look at the surge and the increase of women elected officials since when Mary Margaret started, but even after the Anita Hill case against Clarence Thomas, when we had a surge that year where members of Congress, I think we had probably an 80% increase of women who were elected that year. You know, I think the biggest problem it really sort of poses is not for Democrats, Bill, it's for Republicans. Because if you look at this week and compared to last week, the amount of diversity that you see, but not even bringing race into the picture, but just the level of women who are actively engaged in a very front and center role from First Lady Michelle Obama to Elizabeth Warren. To me, I'm not worried about the whole issue of women being excited about having a woman to be the Democrat nominee. I think it's more of a threat to Republicans because we know that women, you know, women of color and white women make up the majority of the electorate. And I just don't see how they're going to be able to compete with all this enthusiasm and excitement that I see on our side right now.
Kyle, this is not a national election. It's a state-by-state election. We all know that. And the Trump campaign has made it quite clear that they intend to challenge Clinton in states that are traditionally blue. Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, even, and others, because they're making their appeal to white working men. Does the Clinton campaign need to find some message? Maybe it's Joe Biden tonight or beyond to include those people in their tent?
I'm not convinced that this group or that group or whatever is the way this election is really going to shake out. I think it comes down to one question. Do you think the establishment in Washington, D.C. is working well enough to keep it going even with someone you might not particularly like or normally have voted for? Or do you think it's so terrible and so corrupt and so irredeemable that it needs to just be someone needs to go in there and just turn it upside down, even if they can't tell you exactly what it's going to look like when they're done? Yeah. I think that's the ultimate question for the majority of voters in this election.
Yeah, you know what, Kyle? I agree, but I also disagree. And let me tell you why I disagree. If we were sitting here and if President Obama had a 43, 45, 49% approval rating, you know, I would probably say, you know what, people in this country really are disappointed and they don't support what the president and others are doing. As we sit here right now, President Obama has a 53, almost 54% approval rating in this country, higher than Ronald Reagan, higher than George W. Bush, and actually right now is higher, or if not the same, than Bill Clinton when he was on his way out. And so I think when you say that it's sort of, okay, are you comfortable with the direction we're headed, or do you want to go in a new direction? The challenge again with Republicans is that we both, let's just face it, we have two nominees that come in with a lot of negatives, and people are sort of disapproval ratings, you know, that people are kind of concerned about. But I just don't think that Donald Trump is the person to really be able to, in a very temperamental way, articulate that to the American people and be that change.
Well, the one thing I'd point out is, and first, if you read my work, you know I'm not a fan of Donald Trump myself. But I mean, if you look at pollsters that have done this for a long time, the right direction, wrong direction question, 2/3 on average. That's the average in the HuffPo average of polls say wrong direction. I mean, if you look at in those past time, I mean, the discrepancy between maybe those personal approval ratings and where people say the overall direction of the country is are very different. And I think that may mitigate some of what you're talking
about. I'm sorry to interrupt. Let me get Andra in here. We need a political scientist to adjudicate some of this, Andra. What about this notion that the Clinton campaigns thus far in the convention has appealed to its base? Its traditional base of minorities, certainly, but has not yet found a way to reach out to the white male voter particularly. We know white men are voting in large numbers for Republicans these days, but the Trump campaign says we're going to reach more of them than ever before, and that's how we're going to win against the minority voters that are traditional Democratic base. Give us your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, I think there are a couple of things. So one, Trump is coming in at a disadvantage because he waited until the summer to actually put an organization together, and that's going to have consequences for him actually being able to mobilize voters in the long term. I agree with Kyle. There are a lot of people who think that the country is headed on the wrong track. But if we look at that right direction, wrong track question, that people have been saying wrong track for more than a decade now. So I think it's kind of a question of what does that look like? I think people who really do think that it's on the wrong track and really do think that there's something insane about putting the same people in office to try to get different results, you know, I think that those people definitely are attracted to Donald Trump. I think what Hillary Clinton is trying to bank on is the fact that there are some people who are scared by Donald Trump's lack of experience, who are scared by his incendiary and inflammatory rhetoric. And so I think Bill's question is, well, can she reach those voters, particularly working class white men? I think that's part of the reason why Hillary Clinton chose Tim Kaine as her vice presidential candidate. I wrote a piece on this on conversation.us. You know, she realizes that there's going to be some attrition on her left flank. And actually, if you talk to Sanders supporters, there are some folks who are still upset. I mean, so the silent protest last night at the Georgia delegation breakfast today, Bernie supporters got up and explained why they were hurt by the rhetoric last night and explained why they weren't going to be in the convention hall today. So there are going to be some people who she loses on her progressive flank. So she's now pivoting toward the center in an attempt to try to reach out to those people. And so I think having a surrogate like Tim Kaine, who's more ideologically moderate and who's a white man, might be something that might be a strategic move on her part to try to reach out to some of those voters. And I also think she's deploying gender in a way that's really interesting. She is leaning into gender stereotypes about what women are advantaged of. So she has not shied away from being a children's advocate. When Bill Clinton described her as an excellent household manager, he cited that as a skill that she can then use in the White House. And she was also sort of taking on the traditional stereotype as woman as kind of the moral high ground in an attempt to provide these really stark contrasts between her and Donald Trump. And so throughout the convention, you know, we've seen the little video snippets, the advertisements where the Clinton campaign is using Donald Trump's words against him.
All right. Let me get Mary Margaret Oliver back in here. She's been eager to say something, and there Johnson is saying, let me talk.
One of the successful parts of the program last night was the feature of 9/11. Those were the law enforcement, the firemen, the construction workers, they spoke from their hearts, from their hearts. Tim Kaine is going to speak from his heart tonight. I have never seen a national presidential, vice presidential candidate stand up and say, I am against the death penalty. That represents change. The Republican strategy has been for decades to say government's bad, Washington's corrupt, bad, bad, bad. But what you're seeing in a Tim Kaine who has brave enough to say I'm against the death penalty, what you see from Stacey Abrams, what you saw from Michelle Obama, what you see from all these successful women's stories, the women, the mothers of deceased children, those stories that they told were about their survival, their success. All of these successful parts of our society are going to communicate to the American people that this choice between this change agent, this highly skilled, highly committed public service, and this guy who says he's never had a second thought in his life is going to be compelling.
Darren?
One of the things I want to sort of bring to this table, and I think I can do this, and Andrea, it's definitely the political science, but I'm the one person that actually worked on a presidential campaign and know what it takes to win. I just want us to remember a few things. One, it's all about the Electoral College map. As we sit here, President Barack Obama got 332 electoral votes. Mitt Romney got 206. Right now, Donald Trump basically starts at 206. And I think it's fair to say if Hillary Clinton is not starting at 332, she's, roughly around 290 to 300. One of the reasons why I think that the strategy that you're seeing at the convention is going to work well, not only for Hillary Clinton, but it's going to work well for Donald Trump, is because in 2012, and I was front and center in the South, I had 12 states, Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida were my big states. And of course, I love Georgia, but we won the battleground. We didn't persuade anybody, Cal. We basically just turned out our base voters, and we did not give people a reason who voted for us in 2008 to not go vote for us. And so this whole notion about, Donald Trump and that the Democrats are being too partisan and we're being too, appealing to our progressive wing, that's how she's going to win. But the one thing I think that scares me about this election is that Donald Trump is sort of doing that as well. But the challenge is, unlike what you saw from Bernie Sanders, when Ted Cruz refused to endorse him and really, I think, sort of snatched the mantle or the crown from Mike Pence of saying, hey, I want to control the conservative party. I think that's the challenge. And then ultimately, we've got to deal with sort of a lack of enthusiasm and apathy as far as voters on both sides.
All right. I've got to get a break in here. And when we finish it up, we'll come back and continue talking. It's a Democratic convention, and we have Democrats at the table, plus Kyle Wingfield, a conservative columnist over at the AJC. So we're going to continue talking about the Democratic Party and its convention right after this short break.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal. Your car can make so many sounds, sputtering, backfiring, squeaking, grinding, if it's my car, threats, muttered under its breath. Trade in those sounds for the sounds of public radio. Donating that unwanted car, truck, or even an RV is easy and helps the station in a big way. You may even earn a tax write-off.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR and thanks.
This week, Democrats meet in Philadelphia to nominate Hillary Clinton for president. NPR and PBS NewsHour will be there too. We're teaming up to bring you live coverage each night of the convention. I'm Rachel Martin. Join me, Judy Woodruff, and Gwen Ifill as we take you inside the arena and to the floor of the Democratic National Convention. It's special coverage from PBS NewsHour and NPR News.
You can listen live tonight starting at 8 on gpbnews.org.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. At the table with me, Kyle Wingfield, a columnist with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Theron Johnson, a Democratic strategist who ran the Obama reelection campaign in the South, and State Representative Mary Margaret Oliver, a long-serving woman in the Georgia General Assembly. And on the phone, Dr. Andra Gillespie, who is up in Philadelphia. Of course, she's a political scientist at Emory University. Let's do this. First of all, let me read a couple. The tweets are coming in from Edward Funtz. He says, Republicans got a first, too. This is the first time they nominated a man who's going to take them years to get over. Ted B. Says the server is out of operation. It can't be hacked anymore. He's talking about a story we'll get to in a couple minutes. Donald Trump today held a very contentious news conference in which he essentially invited the Republicans to hack, to discover the 30,000 emails.
The Russians.
I'm sorry, what did I say? The Russians, yes. To discover the 30,000 Hillary Clinton emails that presumably are lost, have never been turned over. It's already a very, very controversial statement, and we'll get to that if we have time. I'd like to, if I may, and Mary Margaret, let me turn to you when we come out of this. You've talked about, Kyle and Theron especially, this notion that this election, to some extent, Kyle, is about whether people are happy or want to change agent. Well, last night, in his speech, which was in itself an unusual speech, a former president of the United States speaking on behalf of his wife, the now nominee of the Democratic Party. But certainly Bill Clinton is aware of what you are talking about, Kyle. And so he framed a lot of his speech in terms of her as an outsider. Not an easy thing to do.
She's insatiably curious. She's a natural leader. She's a good organizer. And she's the best darn change maker I ever met in my entire life. Since she went to Beijing in 1995 and said women's rights are human rights and human rights are women's rights, she worked to empower women and girls around the world and to make the same exact declaration on behalf of the LGBT community in America and around the world. How does this square with the things that you heard at the Republican convention? What's the difference in what I told you and what they said? How do you square it? You can't. One is real. The other is made up.
Andre Gillespie, what do you think of Bill Clinton trying to make the case that Hillary Clinton's a change agent and therefore the one who can clean up the mess that voters feel is going on in Washington?
So I think what Bill Clinton was trying to do overall in that speech was to take some of his wife's negatives and turn them into positives.
Yes.
So, and there were a lot of ways that, she's perceived as impersonal and instrumental, and so he wanted to show the human side of her. And in saying that she was a change agent, he was basically taking that doggedness that I think a lot of people would attribute to her in a negative way and say, no, it is that doggedness and that perseverance that actually allows her to be able to get things done. So it fits into that narrative that she's trying to create of a progressive who gets things done. I think probably the biggest line of that speech was that there was a caricature version of Hillary Clinton and there is the real version of Hillary Clinton that I know. I was in Cleveland last week, and so, you know, if you were in the Quicken Loans arena, you definitely heard a particular viewpoint of Hillary Clinton, you know, derelict, criminal, with the chance of lock her up and other kinds of things. But what Bill Clinton was trying to say was that that is not an accurate depiction of who his wife is.
Let me give Mary Margaret and Kyle a shot at this, too. Mary Margaret?
Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and I were in law school at the same time. The images that he gave about her as a law student, that flowered skirt and the no makeup, that's how we all were at that time. And for her to go into legal services, as President Jimmy Carter said, he appointed her, for her to be president of the Legal Services Corporation Board at a time I was a legal services lawyer, speaks volumes to me and my generation, and younger women too. She has been at the table working on behalf of people who cannot have a voice every single day, which makes her, to me, the ultimate change agent and outsider who can get things done.
You just said Jimmy Carter appointed her to something. I'm in my late 30s. I don't remember any of Jimmy Carter's time in public office. That was all before not just my adult life, my conscious life. Hillary Clinton has been in squarely in the national spotlight for a quarter of a century. I don't think there's any millennial out there who remembers a time pre-Hillary Clinton.
Is that good or bad?
And so the notion, and I think this is part of what drew a lot of them to Bernie in the primary, the notion that someone with that record is a change agent, I just don't think it's believable. And where I think the Republicans will go is, okay, so she was a change agent and how did that work out when she was Secretary of State? Where has our foreign policy gone in a direction that shows that, okay, if she is a change agent, she's the right kind of change agent? I just don't think it's very credible.
I have a toss-up question for any of you. Let me throw out a theory and see if it rings true or if you want to argue with me about it. I think that it feels to me that the Democrats have something of a dilemma on their hands in this convention. It's universally agreed upon, I think, that they need to help make Hillary seem warm and comfortable and humanize her, which they've done quite well throughout this convention, because she's always been seen as so stiff, so militant in her demeanor, that sort of thing. Theron's already shaking his head, but let me finish. What I find to be interesting about this is that this is exactly the time when the Republicans are saying what voters want is somebody who is tough and unrelenting and not warm and fuzzy and comfortable. And yet the images we saw of Hillary so far in this convention are she's a lovely woman, a great mother. I'm wondering if that's not putting them in a somewhat difficult position. And no, Mary Margaret, to say someone is all of those things does not reflect on their gender. We could say the same things about a great many men. I saw you're shaking your head.
Well, you're using the word militant.
Well, sure.
And so
maybe that was a bad word.
That was a bad word.
I'm vamping here. I don't have a script, Mary Margaret. I got to talk for an hour.
People in America recognize hard work. They recognize dedication. I had a close experience Saturday with the Rules Committee, Bernie people. I looked at those and we spent 10 hours together. Those young people, their idealism can be brought to the mold.
I get it, but that's not what I'm asking about, Theron.
So listen, the answer to your question is this. All those things, you said this exactly, and I had this conversation with a Bernie Sanders supporter. Everything that you just said about Hillary Clinton, I agree with you, Mary Margaret, except the militant part, was very accurate.
Don't send me tweets.
Yeah. However, here's the problem, is the only reason she's not getting credit for her decades of being at the forefront, I mean, and basically leading this change, and basically just helping the little people and really helping craft a better world for all of us, is because she's a woman. I mean, let's just say what it is. If you look at the qualifications of Hillary Clinton, and President Obama has said this himself, which, and I know this guy pretty well, that he doesn't give anyone credit they don't deserve, said that she's more qualified than him and will go down in history if elected president as being one of the most people, you know, most qualified people to run. So the fact, Bill, that you just really crystallized something that the Republicans are trying to do. Most people who identify themselves as Republicans, not all, have a problem with a woman like Hillary Clinton who has the leadership skills leading their country. On the Democratic side, the reason she won the primary is all those things were on display and all those things people knew about her, and she still received millions and millions of more votes than Bernie.
Andre, let me be very, very clear here. I am not personally criticizing the way Hillary Clinton presents herself to the world. She's had an incredibly successful career. My point is not that these are bad things. My point is that, is it possible that at a time when voters are looking for a tough guy like a Donald Trump, that the Democrats are spending this week softening her up, making her more like the mom?
Well, I mean, so I think that, we'll see whether or not it works. But I think the logic behind the particular strategy was that the Republican convention might have been too tough, too strong, too harsh, and that it might have scared voters. And so what Hillary Clinton is trying to present is somebody who is logical and somebody who has the temperament to be allowed to handle the nuclear cold. I mean, I think part of the issue here focuses on sort of how one defines qualified for the job. So Democrats are tending to define qualified based on job experience, resume. Have you had the requisite experiences that would put you in a position to kind of understand what the office of president holds? When Republicans are saying that Hillary Clinton is unqualified to be president, they are looking at the record and they are looking at instances during her tenure as Secretary of State in particular where they argue she made mistakes that were so egregious that she shouldn't be entrusted with a bigger job. And we're using the same terms to kind of go about this. And so I think it's more of a matter of perspective. But I think what Democrats are hoping is that the viewing public was so frightened by Cleveland that the sort of more sober, sort of more calmer temperament of Hillary Clinton on display this week as somebody that they would actually be more comfortable being president.
That does seem very clear. They're presenting a very different picture of America.
But to your point, Bill, I think in a time where it seems like weekly or at least every couple of weeks we see an ISIS attack, whether here or overseas, where we've had this issue of police brutality and that sort of thing. I don't know that presenting someone as something other than the tough leader is the right way to go. I feel like it's a football team that's adjusting their style of play to the opponent rather than playing their game against the opponent.
Here's the difference, guys. The same humanization attempt occurred during the Republican convention. Let's not forget, Ivanka Trump got up there and talked about Donald Trump in this way. Oh, he's so loving. Oh, he loves all of us. Oh, he looks out for the little guy. He tells this guy who's working at this center or this building that he's a champion too. They did the same thing. But here's the difference. When Hillary Clinton speaks on Thursday, she's, unlike Donald Trump, she's going to embrace all these things that Donald Trump refused to embrace all these things that his sons and all those guys thought about him. She's going to embrace those things and say, yes, I am that person. But I totally disagree with something that Andrea just said, is that, yes, people are looking for someone to be tough and they want them to, you know, on their record. No, guys, we're talking about the president of the United States of America. And I think First Lady Michelle Obama said it the best. We're talking about someone who has the temperament and the experience. This guy, Donald Trump, has no electoral experience. He's never, ever written a bill, has never created any policy in his life. Does he have the temperament and the judgment skills to be in front of the nuclear codes when we're at a time of war, and whether he'll make the right decision for our country?
All right. I'm sitting here in a deep hole after this last exchange. I'm going to try to dig myself out. And before we go to break, though, Theron, I want to turn to you on this. And Andrew Gillespie, you should weigh in, too. Last night, we had a moment that I think was really resonant for a lot of us who've been involved in Georgia politics for a long time. One of the people, of course, who seconded Hillary Clinton's nomination was Representative John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis. Let's just listen to a very short excerpt of what he said, but then let's talk about why I think it has real resonance.
8 years ago, our party, the Democratic Party, nominated and elected the first person of color to ever serve in the White House. Tonight, on this night, we will shatter that glass ceiling again.
So, Theron, here's what I meant. We all remember 8 years ago, John Lewis gave his endorsement to Hillary Clinton early in the primary. He was one of her very first endorsers. He jumped on board early. And the Clinton campaign was rocked when, as Barack Obama started picking up steam, John Lewis said, I'm sorry, I've got to go with Barack Obama. And he withdrew his endorsement of Hillary Clinton and gave it to Barack Obama. So it was moving to me last night, Theron, to see John Lewis 8 years later saying, I'm with her.
Bill, I can talk about that in a very intimate way. I was with John Lewis. I was working for Congressman Lewis at the time. And when I tell you that Bill Clinton, Gordon Giffen, and Hillary Clinton herself, everyone was blowing his phone up saying, you got to endorse now, you got to endorse. It was a very tough decision for him. I actually rode in the car with him that day over to Pascal's restaurant where he endorsed then Senator Clinton. But what was so compelling about our congressman who we all love, who did the second last night, is to me, it's about building bridges. And it's not about building walls. And I think that you're right. For him to have the character and the courage to say in 2008, you know what, hey, I misread the tea leaves. The country is moving in a certain direction and the country is moving towards Barack Obama. And I want to be a part of that change. But then to come back and then when Hillary Clinton decided that she was going to run, has been out there fighting for Harry Day. So I think what last night did, it sort of showed a lot of us, particularly people on the Bernie Sanders side, that even though your candidate did not win, or even though you made a choice and it did not work out the way that you wanted to work out, let's be bigger than ourselves and let's do the right thing for our country. And I think that's what John Lewis did last night.
I thought it was an interesting moment. Andrew, real quick, you get the last word in before we have to take a break.
So I mean, I don't think that it was necessarily that. I mean, I think it, that switching endorsement in 08 wasn't personal, and I think that was demonstrated tonight. What I was moved by in that nomination was that it was first Barbara Mikulski, the senior woman in the Senate, and then John Lewis, the civil rights legend, all coming to endorse it. And I think the key takeaway was another glass ceiling. There are many glass ceilings that people aren't competing in terms of sort of which identity kind of takes precedent over the other, and that we need to break down all kinds of barriers and not just one.
I think that is exactly right. That was the message to the country. But to those of us in Georgia who've been involved in following or being active in politics, it was a moment when John Lewis finally made good on his commitment to Hillary.
Absolutely.
8 years ago.
I mean, I think just to go with that, it's more of the, 80% of the district voted for Barack Obama. John Lewis had to do it.
We're going to have to take a break. As we go to break, a few tweets. Sam Burnham says, why do they have to try to humanize someone who's been in the forefront for 25 years. Patty Kosh says in the 70s, women's rights had already been championed way before Hillary. We have opportunities, pay and choice. Those are old issues. Jeffrey McLaughlin says, as an independent and watching both conventions, the GOP doesn't look like the America I know, old, white, and angry. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB if you want to get into the conversation. We're going to come back and have a rapid third segment. One of the things we're going to do is talk to Mary Margaret Oliver about interesting things that happened in the Rules Committee at the convention. And then we'll summarize the runoff elections, the big ones that took place here yesterday. This is Political Rewind at 247.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Amy Chozick talks about her experiences covering Hillary Clinton. She's written extensively about the Clintons, first for the Wall Street Journal and now for the New York Times, where she's a national political reporter. This week, Chozick is at the Democratic National Convention. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
Mary Margaret, at the beginning of the show, Theron Johnson said that he thought one real winner out of this whole convention is Bernie Sanders and his people, because their movement will live on. As a member of the Rules Committee this past weekend, you certainly saw the Sanders people have a big victory on a very important issue for Bernie, superdelegates. Tell us a little about that.
Bernie Sanders is a winner, and his supporters are a winner. I was so impressed in the 10 hours of our Rules Committee meeting on Saturday with these young people, and most of them are young and new and engaged at an incredibly high level of our national politics. You know, 6 months ago, they might have been monitoring the prom king contest, but today they're putting amendments forward to Barney Frank, chairman of the National DNC Rules Committee, and I was impressed. They have an intelligence and an engagement, and there are a few old curmudgeon lefties who are going to do a walkout. I mean, I love old curmudgeon lefties. I've got some of my best friends. But it's really these young Bernie people that maybe not with the high skill level, maybe not with the polish of a lot of members of General Assembly don't have polish either, trying to present amendments. It was an impressive day, and the Unity Reform Commission that comes out of the Rules Committee will address the issues of superdelegates and the other fundamental process issues that are relevant for discussion.
Bernie railed against superdelegates from the very beginning, and even this past month was complaining that without superdelegates he might have been the nominee, even though pledged delegates did put Hillary Clinton over the top. And the Rules Committee, it appears now, is going to reduce the number of superdelegates that will be awarded in each state. That is a true victory for the Sanders people.
It's a big victory. There's a timetable to it. There's specific goals. The first 5 or 6 or 10 votes on the Rules Committee were about a variety of ways to reduce superdelegate entirely or their influence, and it resulted in the compromise. And I think it's a huge victory. And again, for all of those young people that were there in that room, that chaotic, typical political fight room, my hat is off.
I totally agree with Representative Margaret Oliver's sentiment in regards to and the recognition of the Bernie Sanders people. They were very organized. They've been very engaged. But let's just go back a little further here. See, one of the things that I think that I have a problem with the superdelegate process is this. when Bernie Sanders decided he wanted to run for president, just like if I decided I want to run for anything, there are rules and regulations and sort of a process in place. And so to come out and then get in the midst of the campaign and to choose to run as a Democrat and then to complain about the current superdelegate process that's been in place for a long, long time, I think was a little bit, you know, sort of a disadvantage for him, because Hillary Clinton, what she did very successfully is that she worked very, very hard and her people to secure those superdelegate votes throughout the country before the actual primary
yes,
started.
But Kyle, the Bernie Sanders, you know, contention that this is, I hate to use the Donald Trump word, rigging the system. You are talking now about party leaders, big shots, who are controlling a good number of votes. And he's not wrong, is he, to argue against that?
Well, one thing that's been interesting to watch this year, I think, on both sides, is this idea that these primaries are about something other than the party. You know, you've seen this push on both sides to have no closed primaries and only open primaries. And then you've seen some pushback, like on the Republican grassroots side, wanting to turn Georgia into closed. And I don't think they've gone as far as making it a caucus, but, you know, to make it smaller. And so it's been this interesting dynamic, I think, on both sides about what a party exists for in the context of a presidential election, who the nominee of a party represents and who they work for.
All right.
I personally don't have a problem with the parties keeping more control over that, but I do think that would be one of the things that pushes us away from the two-party system.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a grassroots activist, you don't like this superdelegate situation a whole lot. All right. Look, we got a very short time, but I did promise we'd look just briefly at the results of runoffs. There are some dramatic races. Kyle, Drew Ferguson, down in the 3rd Congressional District, won against Mike Crane by a pretty good margin, a victory for the business wing of the Republican Party against the conservative, social conservative wing of the party, yes?
I'd say establishment versus non-establishment. I heard from people down there that the comments that Mike Crane made about police resonated.
I'll shoot him to kill if they come into my house without a warrant.
That hurt him so badly in that race, more than anything else from what I can pick up.
Mary Margaret, I wonder, because Crane had the backing of social conservatives like Josh McCune, because he was one of the most adamantly upset when the governor vetoed RFRA, should we read anything into that? Was this, to even a small extent, a referendum on RFRA and how the district votes on that, feels about that?
I would say it's a very small.
Okay.
It's very small. What happened in DeKalb County yesterday was pretty positive for our county.
Yeah, let's say Sharon Barnes Sutton.
Sharon Barnes Sutton did not need to be in politics.
She lost to Steve
one
Bradshaw.
Day longer. People of DeKalb County, black and white, north, south, east, west, recognize that her contributions were poor and negative.
Well, not only, Theron, has she been under something of an ethical cloud, but she, an African-American commissioner, played the race card against her opponent, Steve Bradshaw, first putting out pictures of him with his wife, who happens to be white, and then pictures of Sam Jackson as the evil slave in 12 Years a Slave, or is it Django? I don't remember which.
Yeah, I think Commissioner Barnes Sutton, you know, unfortunately lost this race, but and listen, it was largely because not of her commitment and doing good for her district. The truth of the matter is that she has some very questionable ethics issues that occur. And so when you have that happening, that overshadows sort of the good things that she's really done for her district. Now, as far as playing the race card in a campaign, you know, I wasn't really that really hands-on with it. But I think ultimately there's a change occurring in DeKalb. And Mary Margaret Oliver knows this more than anything, is that there's got to be this bridge between North DeKalb and South DeKalb.
Yeah, it's bad.
And when I talked to her before we aired, and we're sitting here talking about how if the candidate for CEO, Michael Thurman, becomes the CEO, she's already willing to work with that person, him being an African-American male, she being a white female, to really help move the county forward. Those are the type of conversations we got to have in
Cobb
County. All right,
we are almost completely out of time. Up in Cobb County, Kyle, the chairman, Tim Lee, who might have thought he would be rewarded for bringing the Braves to Cobb, lost to his opponent, Mike Boyce. Boyce got like some 65%, I think, of the vote. This is a vote, I assume, over voters' demand for transparency in government. Yes?
I think it's that, and I think it's also, you know, you never saw anything from Tim Lee after that episode that was any way towards, you know, apologizing for the way he went about it or you know, trying to meet people halfway. It was a very high-handed attitude that he took the whole time. And I think up until the end, he truly didn't think he did anything that voters ought to be mad about whatsoever. And clearly 65% of them yesterday felt
otherwise.
A
couple other quick results. Mary Margaret Oliver, it looks like Vernon Jones is headed back to the Georgia General Assembly.
Vernon Jones is headed back for, we'll see what happens next.
And 94-year-old John Yates, longest serving member of the General Assembly, lost his reelection.
Such a gentleman, such an admired gentleman. I'm very sorry he won't be with us.
All right.
And one thing to add.
Real quick.
Ted Jackson, the Fulton County Sheriff.
Yes.
It was in a very tough runoff election with Richard Langford. We got to definitely congratulate Ted Jackson for basically going through a hard-fought runoff.
Winning the sheriff's race.
We got to love our sheriffs in Fulton
County. All right. Thank you. Andre, you have about 45 seconds to tell us what you're excited about as you prepare for tonight in Philadelphia.
I'm from Richmond, Virginia, from right outside there, so I'm actually really excited to hear Tim Kaine tonight. I think tonight we'll see sort of what the appeal is going to be to the center and whether or not that looks credible. And, of course, I'm going to be really excited to hear President Obama.
The hall, we're told, has been packed for the first two nights of the convention, at least during prime time, as opposed to what it looked like in Cleveland. You were at both. Is that your experience?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of it just has to do with the sheer number of delegates. You've got almost twice as many Democratic delegates as you do Republican delegates, which makes it a premium, actually, on the guest seat. So because the delegates are actually sitting up in the rafters, which wasn't the case in Cleveland, so that actually leaves fewer seats. So it has definitely been full in the nosebleed section where I'm sitting.
All right. Andre Gillespie, Emory University Associate Professor of Political Science. So happy to have you. Come home, get out of that terrible heat, and come back into the studio. We miss you.
Thank you.
We're also thrilled to have had Kyle Wingfield of the AJC, Mary Margaret Oliver, and Theron Johnson with us in the studio for the show today. Our phenomenal senior producer on Political Rewind is Jenny Ament. Our producer is Taylor Young. Our Trevor Young, our board operator in there, is Tyler Morris. And we have our interns, Caroline Hayes, who's leaving us on Friday, and Hannah Rose Adams in there? Hannah Rose Adams, thank you for being here. We'll be back next Wednesday with another political rewind. No, we'll be back Friday at 3 with another political rewind. I need some rest after many late hours of watching conventions. I'm Bill Vigan. See you again on Friday for Political Rewind.